The 384th edition of the Four Corners Podcast starts right now.
This is the Four Corners Podcast.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I've said that. To be in Chapel Hill, to be at the University of North Carolina.
We win! 54-53, North Carolina did it! North Carolina wins the championship!
With 20 seconds left to play, goes back to Michael Jordan, jumper from out on the left, good! You're on the way to Worthy! Worthy 5! The Tar Heels are going to win the national championship!
Weber, front court, Carolina with foul. He takes the timeout.
Technical
They're out
foul.
Of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul on Michigan. They're out of timeout.
Front court. Williams on the drive. Gets it back out to hit. Long outside shot. Short rebounded. May. It's over. Carolina has won the national championship.
89-72. And how about them Tar Heels? They are the national champions.
I've been the luckiest coach in the world.
Pump fake for three. Too strong on the shot. That's it. The Tar Heels are the national dadgum champion.
Carolina has been tested and tried and been proven successful through all the years. And the way that we will play will be the Carolina way.
My love for North Carolina, I mean, I love this school, I love these fans, and I love everything about it, and I would die for this school, I really would.
Here are your hosts, Josh Marlowe and Anthony Pagnotta.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Four Corners Podcast. We are powered by Carolina Electrical Services. Josh and Anthony back with you guys once again today. Another massive transfer portal update. A lot of news coming out on Carolina's front as portal season is, you know, it's hit fifth gear, and there's news coming left and right, and Carolina very much involved in the thick of things with the best prospects, the most sought after prospects in the portal, this transfer portal cycle. We're here to talk about all the different news and how it impacts Carolina for the remainder of this off season. We got some recruiting that we got to talk about as well. But before we get to any of that, we start every edition off, as we always do, pod thought of the day. We go to former Carolina baseball head coach Mike Fox, and his thought of the day is, quote, experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And I think when the portal first became a thing, this would be a great quote to describe that, because, you know, most people look at the transfer portal as an easy way out, as kids quitting on certain situations, you know, or not responding well to adversity. And look, those definitely do exist in the portal. But I do think, for all its intents and purposes, the transfer portal has done what it's intended to do, which is give kids and give players better opportunities to play their respective sport, whether it's at a higher level, a more competitive level, one to get them ready for the NBA, or one to get them more minutes, or whatever it is. The portal has created that. And what that has done is given these kids a brand new perspective and a brand new college experience, which ultimately I think makes it all the more unique, and it makes it all the more difficult to build the team that you're trying to build. But you saw it come together really well for Carolina in a positive way this past year, having a guy like Cormac Ryan, who was on, you know, was at his third school in his college career, bringing in a guy like Harrison Ingram, and all their different experiences in their different walks of life. It all came together and culminated in a special regular season for Carolina, and one that, you know, we just fell short of what we were wanting to achieve in the postseason. But there's no doubt about it. When you look at the way that many programs are using the portal, experience is the top thing that you're looking for, and you wouldn't be able to get it if the transfer portal wasn't what it is today.
Yeah, I mean, look, you used to be able to go in and get some help. You know, even when we were growing up as kids, You know, there would be the occasional moment that you would go in and get a Justin Knox, you know, somebody that could help your depth. But you were never getting pieces that were as significant as guys that we've seen here in the last few years that are impacting runs in the NCAA tournament, that are carrying your team at certain times. In the case of Brady Manek, even before the portal, a guy like Cam Johnson that Carolina got that was so impactful as a transfer. So, I mean, yeah, it's definitely created, it's chaotic. There's no doubt about it. And it's created basically a free agency type of feel to college sports. And look, on one hand, I think that's exciting. I think there's a little bit of excitement for days like this where the portal window opens. Now, this is for football, but they have it for basketball too. We saw it when the portal window opens. What big names are jumping in? Is this a guy that Carolina is going to be interested in? Does he fit what Carolina is looking for? I think that kind of stuff, even if it if you say it's frustrating because maybe, you know, you don't get to establish the connections with guys that you used to in the past of staying 3 or 4 years, just about everybody on the roster, I think at the same time, it allows you to, you know, have something that gets you excited in the offseason as opposed to, hey, we just lost in the NCAA tournament. Now we got to wait however long again to talk Carolina basketball. So from that respect, I think there's some good that comes out of it. And also, I mean, we've seen it for Carolina especially. You know, it's a chance to bring in guys that value this type of experience. You know, Cam Johnson was a great first example, but even more so the last few years, you've seen what it's meant to guys like Brady Manek. You know, this year, Cormac Ryan, Harrison Ingram, guys that didn't have the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament, that didn't have the opportunity to play for a school that was on national television every chance they get, and didn't, you know, no offense to Stanford, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh. Like, they didn't have the passionate fans that Carolina has. And those guys have been embraced. And you see when they talk about their time at Carolina, and we'll see it, you know, in future years when Ingram and Ryan talk about it, just how impactful that time is there. And I think that's the special thing that you get to see with the transfer portal.
Yeah, no, I think for as much negative as it's done, I think it's done double the positive. And as someone that was against it, I've come to embrace it and realize it's good for the sport in a multitude of different ways. It's created more parity. It's created more balance. It's put college basketball in the spotlight for to where now it's almost a 365-day a year sport, which is good. And it's good seeing Carolina, despite being the premier program in the country, adapting to the way the sport is being played and ran, and not resting on the laurels for what they've done the previous 60 years to get them where they are today. With that, we'll go ahead and just get right into all the news, all the notes, because there's a lot that we got to cover in this edition of the podcast. The first one is the Kentucky transfer, Aaron Bradshaw, the one that Carolina was getting involved with. I think on the surface, like, not that it wasn't serious intent on him. I think the majority of it was a guy that they were going to take a flyer on and be willing just to kind of stick their neck out for because of the talent, despite some issues off the court with just, you know, motivation, want to, desire. He lands at Ohio State, and that's a great get for Diebler and the job he's done since he became, you know, their interim head coach, and then, of course, getting the full-time job. On the surface, Carolina fans are going to see a five-star prospect that went from one blue blood institution to not a blue blood, but a program that's, can, you know, in that second tier of best jobs in the sport, or maybe third tier, depending on how you look at it. Ohio State.
You got to list these out at some point because you keep saying this to us all the time.
Yeah, so. I would consider Ohio State a second tier job in the sport. So they're going to see it on the surface, and we know the way Carolina fans react when they get involved with a guy that's got five stars to their name, and they don't get them. People are going to overreact and say Hubert can't recruit and the program's slipping, when in reality, and we got to see what Bradshaw turns out to be at Ohio State. On the surface, man, Carolina may have dodged a bullet, and they may have missed on a guy that wasn't going to fit in, wasn't going to be the type of team player that this team needs them to be. And in the long run, if we're being honest, may have hindered them from getting some of the other guys that they're more high on wanting to bring to Carolina. And so I'll go back to what I said whenever we first talked about him. I wasn't going to be against going after him, but I was never operating under the assumption, man, if Carolina gets Aaron Bradshaw, they're good.
Well, here's the thing, right? When they offered him, at the time, there wasn't really anybody else in the portal that you were looking at and saying, man, Carolina's got to offer them if they're going after a big man. I mean, Morey was already in there, and we'll talk about him a little bit later. But, I mean, for Carolina, I think this – the thing with Bradshaw, it was very well known for a while that he was entering the portal. Like, he became very disgruntled at the end. Wouldn't have mattered if John Calipari had stayed in Kentucky. He was gone.
Yeah,
he wasn't coming back. So, I mean, that's the thing, is that I think Carolina probably initially reached out to him. Because remember, his first start was against Carolina, and he had a pretty successful game, especially on the offensive glass. And so Carolina was probably intrigued, and they said, all right, well, let's reach out. But the thing is when you start seeing the other names that jump into the portal, you start hearing a little bit more, reading more about him. You start to see people questioning his motor, saying that there's times where it just seems like if he isn't playing the role that he wants to, he sulks, and he's a guy that kind of, you know, takes himself out of games and will remove himself because he's not getting, you know, the type of play, or, you know, he's not getting the ball nearly as much. I mean, that was his issue in high school. He played a lot in high school, and there's a reason he was as talented as he was. But reading from Adam Finkelstein of 24/7 Sports, who broke him down when he entered the transfer portal, he said, look, man, this is a guy that in high school, when he was on a team where there were better players, he would get frustrated and just disappear. And so that's not what you want. So for him, I mean, look, is he a guy that if he lands in the right spot, then the motor could eventually start to show up, and as a result, the talent shines through and he becomes a really great player? Oh, of course. That's definitely a possibility. But I think it's what I said right there. It's the right spot. And for Carolina, I don't know if that was. Maybe it could have been. But the thing is this is not one that you should be freaking out about. I had someone that commented. I looked right before we started recording the podcast. Somebody said, man, I'm starting to get real concerned. They're missing on a lot of these big guys. It's like, guys, they've missed on two people. That's it. And one of them, we came on here and put him at the bottom of our list and said, look, we like him, but if we bring him in, I think there's a legitimate competition between him and Jalen Washington, because we don't question Jalen Washington's effort. So I'm not freaking out about this one, man. I just I don't get those fans that are panicking about losing Aaron Bradshaw to Ohio State.
Again, I'll reference it because they saw five-star prospect played at Kentucky. Remember the success he had against Carolina back in, you know, early December. But here's the other thing. You know, Hubert and John Calipari maybe aren't the friends that John and Roy Williams were, because they had been in the game so long. And these coaches talk.
Well, and he knew him from his time back in television. So he's probably got a relationship way back with John.
And so, you know, I'm pretty sure that when Carolina was doing their homework, they got the opinion of Aaron Bradshaw from Aaron Bradshaw's perspective.
Yep.
And they got it from the Kentucky perspective. Man, John Calipari ain't afraid to play freshman. Like, if there's one thing about him, he's not afraid to play.
Most of the time, he has no choice.
Like, he's not afraid to play an 18-year-old with the schedule that Kentucky plays and with the pressure that comes with that job. And so, not to say that he's, you know, Calipari's not to blame at all, but a lot of this was a player-induced incident as to why his role diminished after a nice game against Carolina, to where he was not really a part of the rotation when you got into the SEC season, let alone the NCAA tournament. Well, you referenced that Carolina's missed on two, so we'll get to the second guy. And again, this one, I don't even know if Carolina missed on because he didn't even come to campus.
Yeah, no one got a shot with him.
And that's Omar Ballo, the big man from Arizona, the guy that I had at the top of my wish list.
That's right.
Because of his, I think he's just a little bit more explosive on the offensive end while being a guy that can rebound, defend, do all the things defensively on the interior that you want and need your big man to do. He's going to Bloomington. He's going to play at Indiana. And look, this is, I think, a big reason why, you know, when he set his schedule, I think we knew internally Carolina at a disadvantage.
I mean, he didn't even set a visit. So, like, I think at that point, everybody could kind of piece together it's going to be tough for Carolina to actually lock one in.
And look, I said if Carolina would have gotten him, depending on the other moves, I think it would have maybe put Carolina in a situation, in a position to be one of the favorites to win a national championship going into next year. That's still possible, depending on how Carolina fills out its roster through the portal and the decisions of R.J. Davis and Harrison Ingram to come as they weigh their potential to go play professional basketball or not. I think the question about when it comes to Ballo is how much of an influence did Caleb Love have in this decision? A guy that, you know, could tell him firsthand what the culture is like, what the experience is like, and how he was no longer welcomed in Chapel Hill after a disappointing junior season.
Okay, let me cut you off right there because it has absolutely nothing to do with that.
Yeah, if you don't think
zero chance.
If you don't think Caleb Love was whispering in his ear and telling him this and telling him that,
no.
You've got a higher opinion of Caleb Love than I do.
I mean,
I'm not saying that played a whole role.
What would show you that Caleb Love is this horrible person? I mean, I don't see him as a guy. Didn't he write on his shoes during the Duke game? What was it? Forever UNC or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, look.
Like, dude, come on, man. We've
but
said
this is
a lot
a guy
of things.
That knows, this is the guy that knows the culture, that knows the way the program is set up. And look, maybe he just told him straight up, you're not going to fit there. It may not be a negative thing. It just may be something where Caleb Love looked at it and said, I know you. I know Carolina. It's not going to be a fit. But if you don't think he played a role.
I think you got the tinfoil hat on.
No,
I think you're crazy.
Like if you don't think he played a role, then you're.
I think honestly, you've gotten to the point where you are hating on Caleb Love. So basically, at this
point, you don't
want him back on campus ever again.
No, if you don't think that.
I mean, who do we think this is? We think this is Rashad McCants?
But if
come on, man.
If you don't think he
stop it.
Was telling him about the way Carolina is and the way that Carolina operates, and that played a role in his decision.
I mean, he may have asked him a question.
Then you're being naive.
He may have asked him a question, but dude, I'm not going to say that Caleb Love was telling him, dude, you don't want to go here. Here's the thing. Haven't we beaten Caleb Love down enough? Like, seriously, man. I understand it. I get it that it was the best move for Carolina to move on from him. But come on, man. I don't see him being a dude that's bad-mouthing. He wanted to come back to Carolina. Like, I don't know. There's no way. He may have asked him, like, hey, man, you know, in terms of the, you know, Carolina, what do you think? Like, you played there. And, I mean, honestly, I think Caleb would say, yeah, I mean, it just didn't work out for me there. I think, you know, he probably told him, like, look, man, campus is great. You know, Cubert, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he did divulge some of that thing. I also think it's probably known that that's kind of how it went down because it was pretty publicized. It's one of the biggest schools in the country. I think a lot of guys kind of knew that. I think this really is that, honestly, most guys that schedule official visits, especially when you have a large group like this, you schedule the school that you're feeling the best about first. And if they give you the impression that you want, then that's where you're going to commit. And here's the thing. We knew, we pretty much knew he was committing before he even went on that visit. Travis Barnum, who does an outstanding job for 24/7 Sports covering this, put in a prediction late last week that he would end up in Indiana. So, I mean, unless Indiana just completely dropped the ball, I don't it doesn't make sense. And here's the other thing to remember with Indiana. You remember this because you absolutely roasted this man for this take. Mike Woodson said that this is a game that goes through big men. You go through the post to win games in college basketball right now. You don't think they offered a pretty significant amount of NIL money to a guy that probably he feels like is the best big man in the portal? Because they need something, man. That team needs anything to try to get back to the tournament.
I don't know if it's just, I mean, like, the NIL played a role, I would imagine. Last time I checked, Carolina's NIL fund not hurting. The guys that, you know, they're getting their guys the money.
But
that,
I mean, is Carolina gonna throw everything at? I mean, honestly, here's the thing: where did Carolina? That we don't know where Carolina stacked him with some of the other guys on this board.
I think more important than the NIL, I think he knew when he committed to Indiana, he was going to be the team's first option.
He should be.
If
I feel like they were in on a big guard, though, that might. But, I mean, he'll be one of their primary guys.
If R.J. Davis comes back, he's now the second option. If Harrison Ingram comes back, he's probably the third option. So from a,
and then what happens if Ian Jackson takes off? Then where's he at?
Like from a playing style standpoint, makes a lot of sense that he ends up at Indiana because you're going to play for a coach that's going to get fired next year. But while he's getting fired, is prioritizing you and putting you in the best position possible.
Yeah, what does he care? He's got 1 year left anyway. So.
Whereas, you know, for Carolina, like, you would be a part of the game plan and you'd be a part of what they do and what they want to achieve. But if R.J. Davis is back, you're not the primary focus on offense. And so I think that's a bigger to-do than the NIL. Because I think if Carolina wants somebody and they're going all out, man, the guys, our guys are making the money that they want to make.
Oh, I don't question that.
That they need to make. That's ultimately the reason why Davis and Ingram haven't made a decision yet, because it's a legitimate decision for them. Because there's a legitimate, especially for RJ, there's a legitimate scenario where they're making more money in college than they'd make professionally. So you have,
I mean, yeah, there's definitely a chance.
You have to weigh that. And so, but again, I'm not blaming Caleb Love as the reason why Balo's not in Chapel Hill.
I think bringing it up is not letting the dude off the mat. I think that's just kicking him while he's been down around Tar Heel fans' minds for, I mean, like, to me, at some point, you got to just let him up.
But if you don't think that there was conversations to have to sway him one way or another, you're just being naive.
Because it's why would he? I got to be honest. Why would Balo listen to him anyways? He was his teammate for 1 year, and I got to be honest. How much do we know what the relationship was like between them? Like, we have no idea. They didn't seem like best friends. Like, no one did, to be fair. Like, we didn't watch them enough to where we were like, oh, man, these guys. But, like,
I mean, probably not while he was watching Caleb Love shoot them out of the tournament. So.
I don't know, man. The whole team shot him out of the tournament. Come on. I mean, he had a rough day. There's no doubt. But, like, at some point, like, we can't be sitting here thinking that Caleb Love is just going to try to tear down every. Because then, at that rate, if he ever works out with anybody, then I guess he's going to tell them, yeah, you don't want to go there. Like, I can't see that, man. I don't see him being that type of dude.
It's glad to see you've come around on a full 180, maybe a 360 after saying you couldn't wait for the day that he no longer played at Carolina.
And I was, you know what? And guess what? I was 100% right, because that's the best thing that ever happened to Carolina, and that's the best thing, well, not ever happened, but that's the best thing that happened to Carolina this past year, and it's the best thing that happened for him. Like, if he would have stayed there, oh, it would have been a complete disaster. It would, honestly, it would have been hell. Like, we heard what Seth Trimble said, man. Last year, these guys were relieved to get out of that locker room, and you can't tell me that there wasn't some sort of tension. And, I mean, look, maybe it was something else, but it's hard to believe when people are talking about writing articles and all that kind of stuff about what's going on. So I think it was best, but, like, I'm not going to continue to say that the kid is going to denigrate Carolina and say it's a terrible place to go and all this stuff, that he hates Hubert or whatever. Like, that's not, I don't think that's him. I just can't see. I feel like he's probably moved on. And if he hadn't, there's no way that he would have written on his shoes forever UNC. It may have said another F word on there, but you know.
All right, so there's the first batch of transfer portal news that we have to go over. We come back, we'll get into the latest reports, the latest rumors. Carolina prioritizing another transfer from the SEC. They've made the Final 12 for a Rutgers transfer, and Carolina getting involved with a player from Yale as well. We'll get into that and a whole bunch more, but first we got to get you a quick word from one of our partners. Hey there, Josh here for the Autograph Fandom app. Want to get rewarded for listening to our show? The team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom they take every day, like listening to this show. The Autograph Fandom app gives you access to your favorite UNC content in one place and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and much more. You're already listening to our show, but now you can earn points and get rewarded for it. Head over to the Apple App Store and search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded and download it today for free using the referral code HEALTOUGH. Link and code are also in our podcast description. Welcome back inside the Four Corners Podcast. Josh Anthony hanging out with you guys, going over a lot of the latest in the transfer portal. As just a lot of news and notes have transpired in the last, 24 to 36 hours, we felt compelled and obligated to get behind the microphone to talk about it. So we've talked about the two guys that Carolina has missed on, and Aaron Bradshaw, the Kentucky transfer going to Ohio State, Omar Ballo, the Arizona transfer going to Indiana.
That's right. You can put down the paper bag. There's no need to hyperventilate, folks.
But Carolina is moving forward. And probably just as, if not even more aggressive with the other transfers after the ones that they missed out on. The first one being Jonas Adu, the Tennessee transfer. Inside Carolina reported on Monday that he's kind of become one of the focal points for Carolina this transfer portal cycle. Adu averaged 12 points, over 7 rebounds last year for the Vols, and helping them win an SEC regular season title and make their second Elite Eight in program history, was named to the SEC All-Defensive Team, and was a second-team All-SEC honoree as well. We've talked about him, in the most recent edition of the podcast, looked at his connection to the Tar Heel State, a native of Durham, North Carolina, played in Charlotte at Liberty Heights, was lightly recruited by Roy Williams and UNC, ultimately committed to Marquette, decommitted after Steve Wojciechowski was fired. He ends up playing for Rick Barnes in Tennessee, but now he's in the portal. Are you surprised that he's become maybe the top priority for Hubert Davis and his staff?
Absolutely not. There's a reason that when I saw his name enter into the portal, I said, we got to talk about this dude. Because, one, we really like this guy because we saw him in high school, and we thought at that time, we said it, first couple of minutes of watching him play, we said, oh, man, dude, hopefully Roy gets involved. And he did. It was late in the process, but he did. Ultimately his career takes the path that it does. But now I think you get a second chance. The thing about him is that you saw the leap that he made from last year to this year. And we saw him in person a couple of times here in Charlotte in the NCAA tournament regionals. And I thought he looked really good, man. I mean, I thought there was some explosiveness. Definitely somebody brought this up earlier. I think it was on the podcast commenting on it or something like that. You do not have to worry about him not being a physical player. He played for Rick Barnes. Like, Rick Barnes, you need physical guys. And that's what Carolina can use down low. I mean, yeah, Armando had his moments. There's no doubt about that. But a physical force down low, I think, could go a long way for Carolina, especially if Jalen Washington is to stay. Because then you have that smoother, silkier type of center, especially on the offensive end of the floor, that can stretch the floor, That can guard a little bit better out in space. And then you have the physical inside guy that's a more traditional back to the basket big. That's Adu. That's what he is. And the thing I like about him as well is, and you'll see it with all these guys that we talk about, defensively, there is a lot there. The fact that he was an all-SEC defensive player is pretty impressive, man. I mean, I know that that group, that conference did not do great in the NCAA tournament, but it's still a pretty good conference. And for him to shine like that, I mean, I think that's got to be encouraging and would at least have you feeling pretty good about him being able to do most of the things that we saw Armando Bacot do this year for Carolina. So, I mean, I love Jonas Adu in this transfer window right now. I think that's got to be right near the top of Carolina's priorities.
Yeah, this would have been one had Carolina not gotten involved with. There would have been disappointment on my end.
Yeah, there would have been. I mean, unless like academically something doesn't the credits don't transfer or whatever.
But, oh,
yeah.
I still, at this point, man, we can make credits fit the criteria for what we need to get. This is a guy that if Carolina lands, RJ Davis comes back, Carolina is a perennial contender to win a national championship. I would expect his point per game total to increase playing in Hubert Davis's offense, playing with better offensive talent than what he played with at Tennessee. And yes, I know he played with Dalton Connect, but just cohesively and collectively, Carolina
outside
would have
of Connect.
More,
they just
there'd be more talent on that end of the floor. I think he raises the bar for Carolina defensively. I think he's more athletic than Armando Bacot and can do a lot more things more fluidly. Then you just look at his body, and it's just this big, thick body that cleans the glass.
Settle down over there.
Contest shots, moves really well. The motor is not a question. Like, he plays his tail off. Like, there's a lot to like. If this guy ends up wearing the Carolina blue, he's not the five man to where Carolina's going to be running five out offense, but you could sell that, as a pitch to Jalen Washington to say, man, when you're on the court, we're going to play a different style of offense that features you. Whereas if Jonas Adu ends up in Carolina, you're going to play four around one, see a lot of the same stuff we ran with Armando Bacot. And for the most part, it worked out pretty good with what Carolina was able to do. Two Sweet 16s in 3 years, a Final Four, and a national championship appearance, along with an ACC regular season title. So,
he only played 24, just under 25 minutes per game. So there are minutes behind him to be had. It's not like if he comes in that he's a guy that you just have to try to work a way around to get Jalen Washington to stick and say, hey, you're playing 9 minutes. No, this you could play pretty significant minutes behind him.
Yeah, and look, I think his minutes would increase at Carolina. I think he'd end up still playing 27, 28 minutes. But there's still – I think with him there's a legitimate – and I think with a lot of these guys, I think there's still a legitimate path to seeing Jalen Washington stay if Carolina – look, Carolina's bringing in a big man. It's just a matter of who that big man is and the caliber that big man is. And as we've seen here in the last 2 weeks, they're going to get as good of a big man as they can find, and Jonas Adu would definitely fit the mold for that one. Another bit of news, not only is Carolina prioritizing Jonas Adu, but Clifford Amori is prioritizing Carolina. The Heels are one of the final 12 teams that Amori is considering as he looks to relocate from Rutgers. Remember, we're talking about a guy that averaged over 10 points, 8 rebounds, nearly 3 blocks per game this past season, and 3 blocks per game at the NBA level is very impressive. Nonetheless, doing so in college is kind of unheard of in this day and age. A two-time all Big Ten defensive team. I think with the emergence of Adu, I think it's very evident that Amori is his second on the wish list. I still think that depending on how Carolina fills out their roster, if Amori's the big man that ends up in Chapel Hill, that Carolina's going to be a front runner to compete to win an ACC title next year and maybe win a national championship. What this move would do more than anything is elevate Carolina's back end defensively, a place to where we haven't seen it since Tyler Zeller and John Henson manned the front court, where they, you know, they gobbled up blocks and rebounds and protected the paint as good as a Carolina team as I've ever seen. And so it's nice to see that Carolina's in the Final 12. There's a lot of people that think there's a very good chance he ends up in Chapel Hill. And if he does, this will be a big get for Hubert Davis and the staff.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like it, right? This was one that I was concerned because of how long he had been in the portal. The Carolina would have a lot of work to do to get themselves in contention, but that is not the case. And it makes sense. It's Carolina. But he seems to be taking his process a little bit slower. This, I mean, it'd be a little bit different than what Adu brings, but he still scores the ball pretty well. I mean, this past year averaged 10.4 a game, which is just a point less than Adu. He's a guy that at different times in his career, when Steve Peichel and Rutgers needed him to score the ball, he was capable of doing that. I mean, 2 years ago, I mean, he finished with 13.2 a game. So he's capable of doing it. I think you look at him, really good rebounder as well. Guy that's averaged 7.5 or more in each of the last three seasons. But the thing is this dude is as elite of a rim protector as you get right now in college basketball. I mean, he finished third in the country in blocks per game. So this is a dude that is one of the best in the entire country. And I will say this, you don't need to build your roster around what others are doing. Duke's got two dudes that are coming in that are 7 foot that protect the rim incredibly well. And I think, you know, for Amori, I mean, regardless, that's a great attribute to have. Having someone that can match that, that could be a rim running big, would be great. And the thing is you can't say this dude isn't battle-tested where he comes from. This is a dude that had to play against Zach Edey, against Coleman Hawkins. He's played a bunch of different style five guys in that Big Ten that are really, really good. And so I think, I'm telling you, you say that he's a clear number two. I think it's closer than you'd probably, like, to me, I'd be absolutely thrilled if either one of these guys comes to Carolina, because I see a path where both can be really, really good.
I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't be thrilled if it's Amori, because I would be. I think Adu has more to offer on the offensive end. And can elevate Carolina to just a little bit higher of a level than Amori. And look, let's make no mistake about it. Hubert Davis knows what's coming to Durham. And you're not afraid of it. You're not inferior to it. But you're going to build a team and build a roster that can compete with that, because that's going to be your biggest threat to winning an ACC regular season title. And you got to play him twice a year. So it does make sense for you to go bring in some size and some girth that can handle what Duke will have on their roster next season. The last guy we'll talk about, Danny Wolf. A lot of different news or rumors about him. Sources, you know, whether they're official or unofficial, say he's on campus today.
A lot of smoke, and usually where there's smoke, there's fire. We'll just say that.
And today is Tuesday. You know, the Yale transfer averaged over 14 points per game, nearly 10 rebounds, over a block, while being a first-team All-Ivy Leaguer, and was named the Ivy League Tournament MVP. Did shoot, you know, nearly 35% from three, so can stretch out and hit a perimeter shot. You know, I think on the surface with him, the biggest thing you got to worry about is how does he adjust from going to playing at the Ivy League to the ACC level.
Bingo. That's why I can't put him up there with the other two.
Yeah, no, and look, not to say that him and Paxson Wojcik are the same caliber of player, but Paxson Wojcik was an accomplished Ivy League player. And look, Pax eventually carved out a role for Carolina this year, but I don't think it was the role that he anticipated having when he transferred into Carolina.
Yeah, he started the year as a starter.
Exactly. So, you know, I think Hubert Davis has done a really good job making sure he's recruiting Power 5 talent to play at a Power Conference program. But this is one that I think on the surface, Carolina has to check in, has to do their homework, and I feel like if Wolf is a guy that ends up in Chapel Hill, he's one of two moves in the front court. I don't think this is the only move Carolina would make. This would feel like, you know, a situation where Carolina has three legitimate bigs going into next season as opposed to just two.
The thing that I question with him, there's two things. One is the leap from that Ivy League level. You're right. Now, I will say this. The comparison with Paxson Wojcik is fair. I think he is a more accomplished player than Paxson Wojcik was, because Paxson Wojcik was not a first-team All-Ivy League player. And the thing that's interesting is if you go back and watch how he matched up against a guy that we thought would just go to work on him in Jani Broome, he played pretty solidly against him. But there's a difference between doing that for one game in an NCAA tournament and doing that every night in the ACC. So if you're Carolina, you'd have to be comfortable and feel like, yes, this is a guy that can handle that. The other thing that I wonder, just from watching him, he is not the most physical player. He is a guy that's built rather thin. Now, he protects the rim. I mean, he's still a guy that averaged 1.3 blocks per game, so he's still solid down there. But is he a guy that's going to be able to handle defending not only in conference play, but the teams that Carolina plays in the non-conference too?
Yeah.
That's a lot, man. And I'm telling you, we've seen it. I'm not necessarily with Mike Woodson. I think you need to have really good guard play too. There are a lot of really good big men in college basketball right now. So there's going to be a lot on his plate to handle. I don't know if they would bring in another guy, because if you're doing that, then you could say goodbye to Jalen Washington. But the problem is then you have to make sure that Jalen Washington and Danny Wolf are not too similar in terms of their strengths and weaknesses. I look at Danny Wolf, I see a guy that scores the ball really well, but I see a guy that could probably get beat up on the defensive end of the floor. What do I see when I look at Jalen Washington? Pretty much the same type of player. So that's my concern there. If Carolina gets him, am I going to be disappointed? No, I trust Hubert Davis, and I think he's a guy that can stretch the floor and maybe is ready to make that leap to the next level. But to me, I think it's clear that it's Adu and Amori at the top, and I think for him, he's a guy that, even though he's on campus right now, I think Carolina should want to see if they can land Adu or Amori first.
Yeah, and look, I could be wrong. I feel like he would be the one of two moves for Carolina just because if Carolina does that, then I think Jalen Washington's transferring out. But just because I feel like with him, you got to have some insurance and know that you're going in with a guy that has legitimate power conference experience that can handle all the different things that Carolina needs. That's why they're going to find a big man now, because they can like Jalen Washington all they want, but they know and understand we got to have something. We got to have another horse.
Because, especially if they know RJ's coming back, man.
Yeah, because, look, Carolina's in Maui next year, which UConn will be in Maui. You've got
lovely.
You've got the CBS Sports Challenge, the Classic. You've got the ACC-SEC Challenge. Like, you got the Jumpman Invitational. Carolina's not going to quit playing the big boys in the non-conference, and then you got a 20-game gauntlet in the ACC season. You got to have the horses, you know, to withstand all the games that you're going to play against premier competition. So the biggest thing, and not that I was ever worried or discouraged, I just love how active Carolina is. And it's a coach and a program that they're not resting on their laurels, and they're doing what needs to be done to ensure they have the best roster for next season. Couple of closing notes for you before we do get out of here. Hubert Davis reportedly was in Nashville, had lunch with Cade Tyson earlier this week. He was on campus with Tennessee over the weekend. Again, Carolina showing how much of a priority Tyson is to them in this transfer portal cycle. And Carolina is also set to host 2025 five-star shooting guard Darren Peterson in the near future. He was all but a lock to go to Kentucky, it seemed like, but after John Calipari's decision to leave Kentucky for Arkansas, that recruitment a little bit more wide open. He'll visit Chapel Hill sometime in the near future. With that, guys, it is going to wrap up this edition of the show. Before we let you go, we do encourage you, visit the website HeelToughBlog.com, where every corner of the transfer portal is being covered, both football and basketball, with Carolina football having guys entering the portal now that the second portal window is open for Carolina basketball. Any news and notes that are coming out of the portal, we've got you updated on. So make sure you visit the website every single day, HeelToughBlog.com, for the latest and the best Carolina basketball and Tar Heel football coverage. As for the podcast, you guys know where to find us. Every major podcasting platform, simply search the Four Corners Podcast where we will pop up. We're there. We encourage you guys to rate, review, and subscribe. That way you don't miss any editions of the show throughout the remainder of the basketball offseason. Well, with that, guys, it is going to wrap up this edition of the show. Do want to thank Anthony for hosting with me. We want to thank you guys for listening. And as always, go Tar Heels!
Guys, it just doesn't get any sweeter than that!